Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. We have Michael and Nikki on today. Guys, I really appreciate you being here. Can you guys let us know where you're calling in from, first of all, and what you both do for a living?
We're outside Montgomery City, Missouri. We run a cattle ranch on about 640 acres in Shamrock, Missouri.
That's awesome. So how'd you guys get started in the ranching business? I mean, it was just like a family for one of you that kind of took it over once you got of age, or was it something you started brand new?
No, we're first generation. I had a trucking company for about 20 years. I sold it in 2018, and I moved to Missouri from Wisconsin down here for the grass before the price of land got so high that couldn't afford it. But we run about 225 pair of cows, young stock, two generations, usually two crops. And then we raise replacement heifers as well.
Awesome. So are you guys selling all the way through, whether it's through wholesale or direct to consumer, or are you taking the cattle to auction? What's the kind of general revenue stream you guys are working with?
We're just ramping up the direct to consumers. That's our main goal right now, is to sell everything off the farm to the plate.
Yeah, that's amazing. And obviously, you know, this is a big trend I'm finding. I've actually had a few other ranchers that I don't think the podcast have posted yet, but I've had a few other ranchers doing kind of similar business models on the podcast recently. And so I suppose, you know, what do you kind of find out there in the market that really, you know, led you to, you know, wanting to start your own ranch? I mean, I know you kind of have that general background in the ag community, but what kind of wanted you to, you know, get involved with doing D2C sales rather than maybe a more traditional route of selling to grocers or wholesales or distributors or something like that?
Well, the market right now is good, which everybody wants to be in the cattle business when it's good, but it's going to go down. It's just a matter of time. And to catch it up where it's at, we got in at the right time to get good genetics. We got easy, efficient growing genetics, so we don't need a lot of grains, or any, if that matter. But it's just the fact that we can grow cattle on grass and they marvel well.
And like our carcass size.
Yeah, the carcass size, we can do it on grass and do it efficiently. And we want to take that right to the plate because, you know, the middleman's the one initially making all the money.
Yeah, absolutely. And are you looking to do, you know, work with any like food service, you know, type of like restaurants and things like that? Or are you really just doing like direct to families that way?
We haven't got, and we've talked to a couple restaurants that were interested in it, but the price point to them, you know, they're still buying stuff from Sysco and food service type groups, and they're not after the value of knowing where it came from. So I'm sure there's restaurants out there. We just haven't found them yet. You know, we want to get to that point, but we need to, you know, knock on more doors.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. And I guess when you're thinking about, I know you're looking to ramp up the D2C side of the business. What have you kind of found along the way since you've been looking into things? I mean, one of the biggest like challenges that I hear from the other cattle ranchers that we spoke to that do sell direct to consumers, obviously the shipping costs and, you know, having to ship things frozen is obviously a challenge. You're trying to ship further than like maybe, you know, one state away or like, you know, within your own state. So what have you found out along the way as you're preparing to do more D2C selling about those types of things?
There's a big difference in the types of boxes you can ship with. It's night and day. You know, you have some that wouldn't last longer than a cooler, you know, to get out of state, or some days will, you know, some shipments will be 4 to 5 days and you have no worries.
I do the shipping stuff and I haven't seen a problem with anything. We shipped to, I think the furthest we've done so far is Colorado, from Missouri to Colorado. When it arrived, she still had dry ice in her box. So I don't know. I would think our biggest challenge really is getting in front of the right people. There is a big push for the farm to table thing. And I think people like the idea of knowing where their meat comes from. But to get into, I mean, closest big cities around us would be like St. Louis, Kansas City. And to get in front of those people, it's really hard. It's like a paradigm shift that they have to think when they go to the grocery store. I don't need to pick up the meat there because it's already at my door and I know where it's coming from. And then people don't understand either the labeling laws and how lax they are here, where if you go to the grocery store and it says product of the USA, anybody who doesn't know any better assumes that that means it's grown here, but it could be grown overseas and sent here as long as it's processed here. And so that makes it a big challenge for us to say, I mean, we're Joe Blow, nobody knows who we are, trying to tell them what you've been buying and what you see in the store isn't actually always factual, and that's hard to relay to people.
You know, it is really difficult. The consumer education aspect of this type of business, D2C, it's always a challenge in any industry, but specifically here, there's so much misinformation out there about red meat in general, but also, the way that things are labeled, as you mentioned. How are you planning on kind of grappling with those things, or have you tried anything, whether like through any online channels, try to do some of that education already?
We do a lot on Instagram, and we've really grown on TikTok over just the past week. That's been our like biggest platform. But anybody we talk to about marketing, they're like, TikTok is not the platform to be on. So we started an Instagram account too, trying to grow there, but it's usually I just copy my TikTok video and put it over there because I'm just more fluent in TikTok. But I try to do a lot of educational about the beef. I try to do a lot of the meat your meat. Like, I want people to see us out on the farm with the cows so that they...
It's a great term. I can't believe I haven't heard that before talking to other ranchers. That's such a great term.
I throw it out there all the time. I think it's so catchy.
No, it's so is. That's awesome.
So yeah, I'm trying a lot on social media, and then it's hard too though, because I feel like the whole everything is so convoluted, where how do they know to believe the things that I'm saying? You know, my biggest win was, I think last week, Walmart recalled like 16,000 pounds of beef because of E. coli. So I was like, run with that on a TikTok. But like, that got less action than a video of my dog. And I don't know about the algorithms and how to get that in front of the right people. I think that one got like 500 views and my dog was at like 50,000 in a day. So
yeah, I think if you do talk to any marketers and they kind of steer you away from TikTok, I think that's kind of the reason why is like, this is that nobody knows. I mean, like the algorithms on Instagram seemingly are something a little more predictable. I mean, nobody has that IP but the company itself, but TikTok really just seems to be like super random. There's like really no rhyme or reason why like you have sustained visibility or why you have visibility at like a one-off. There's just like, nobody really can seem to crack that code, so to speak. So yeah, no, that's really interesting. And that's obviously something you have to do. And so yeah, I suppose, you know, have you done any direct to consumer sales yet already? Or is this really like, you're kind of really in like the pre-launch stage of the D2C side?
We've got some sales, but it's not what we want. We want that to be primarily why we're raising all of our beef. We don't want to have to take them to...
Yeah, the sale barn is a necessity. I mean, it needs to be there to set the market, but our biggest enemy is probably other farmers. And, you know, we live in cow country, USA. I think Missouri is third in the nation for cows. So you have everybody and their brother selling meat to local people. And
the neighbors.
So they hack down our price point, which they're happy to get paid what they get paid at the sale barn, plus the processing. When at retail, if they were to take that same animal and take it to retail, it's worth twice as much.
Well, and even I think with ours, are worth a little bit more. We pay a lot for the genetics that we have. So our cattle are yielding a bigger amount of meat in the end.
Right.
Off of less input. So it's something that we pay a higher price to have. And we've got a quality product here. We don't want to knock it for what the sale barn would knock it, which is also our issue with when we do have to take things to the sale barn. Our genetics aren't as appreciated there versus...
You know, our calves will be too fat, you know, where, you know, it looks like they've been backgrounded for 60 days when they're actually just been out on cover crops and they just, you know, two fat calves don't bring, they want them to weigh down them. So, you know, it's a catch 22, but it's good in some instances. In some states, they like fat calves, but not Missouri. No, we want to take them from, you know, calf to the plate and do it sustainably, because there's not too many success stories about sustainable farms right now and being able to just specifically work on the farm rather than, you know, everybody I know has a job off the farm to, you know, substitute their farming habit.
Well, and that's been the trouble too. Like, that's the norm and that's what's accepted. And so when somebody goes and they don't know what they're doing and they might look at pricing and be like, well, who's going to feed us peasants if the ranchers won't? And I literally was like, if you can't afford it, then you need to go to Walmart. Why should we be the ones that are in charge of feeding? And I don't want to call somebody a peasant. That's literally what their comment was. And it's just
self-proclaimed there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we really honestly don't have time for an off the farm job right now.
Right.
We're here running this with all that cattle. And I mean, we work dawn to dusk every day. And I don't know how people work off the farm and manage it.
I would really like to challenge somebody to go to Walmart and actually buy the amount of meat you get from us off the shelf at Walmart. I would almost guarantee it would cost you over $6,000.
I did.
Every cut.
Yeah.
So people kind of complaining, or not necessarily complaining, but just people kind of tend to look at it from the outside in as just like, oh, this is a $180 price point for maybe an eighth cow or whatever price point for a quarter cow, not really taking into account like how much that weighs by the pound, probably end up being the same. That's really interesting. And just for some just kind of anecdotal, maybe something that might be able to help you guys just based on another conversation I had. One of the other ranchers that I talked to recently said that at one point when he was first getting the D2C, he was actually delivering, if somebody ordered at least a quarter cow, he was delivering like these like really cheap little like freezers to give to people, because he was finding that a lot of people that like were choosing not to buy it, or they were buying like lower quantities at the grocery store. He's like, well, even if I did, I wouldn't have anywhere to put it. So he was basically doing like a price point that made like sense by the pound, but for the quarter cow, and then just basically giving people like a 10 by 10 freezer to try to store like as much as they could in there, and then put the rest in their own freezer. So I don't know if that would make sense for you guys, but this is why I love doing the podcast, like to just like, you know, streamline ideas. And I don't know if that's something that you'd be interested in doing, but I thought that was a really unique and kind of scrappy ideas. So
yeah,
there is people out there that have no idea how much space it takes, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean they're clueless. I mean, they want to buy it. There seems like people are interested in it, but you know, the fact that they have to find a place to store it.
Well, and that's, we do offer like smaller boxes too. If people mm-hmm. can't get over that hurdle, I really try to be accommodating. We've got like a 30-pound box is probably our smallest box, but we really, if somebody's got an issue, I woke up at 5 a.m. and somebody had messaged me because we had a pork box and it was like a variety of cuts of pork. And somebody messaged me. They're like, I only like bacon. Could you pack mine with 20 pounds of bacon? I was like, yeah. I ran to the computer, added an item of a 20-pound box of bacon, sent them a link. Here you go. I really want to accommodate. Lo and behold, that person, I still don't have their order. But
right. Yeah.
But it's, we're trying to accommodate whatever they need. The freezer thing wouldn't work because we're shipping all over. But
yeah, maybe a little too far. That is true. He said he was doing very much like local deliveries in state. I think he was in Jersey, I want to say. Upstate New Jersey, I believe he was. But yeah, I think he was definitely saying he was doing it local. Like he was taking his box truck, his refrigerated box truck, and making deliveries and bringing somebody a fridge. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought that was really interesting. But
cool, because everybody who's trying to do it, like we're trying to figure out how to accommodate. He's trying to figure out how to accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a hard hurdle to get over, that supermarket convenience for everybody, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's really difficult to think about, you know, if you are going to sell local, even though it's seemingly an oversaturated market for you guys, with like, there's just like, you're in cow country. So buying local, it's like you go to a million different places. So you could either differentiate, it seems, you know, from that like herd of people that are selling local direct to people, or you, like the way you're currently differentiating yourself, which is essentially, you know, selling out of state and not competing with those, which I think is, I mean, obviously it's a viable option as much as the other. But that might be, you know, a way to maybe get a little bit more of the market share of the local market to do maybe a little something like that. I mean, I don't know. You guys are the experts of this industry. I just know what other ranchers tell me what have been successful. But yeah, so I suppose, and Nikki, I wanted to ask you something that you touched on before. I know you mentioned that, you know, people were kind of commenting like the price point doesn't make sense. And maybe for some people, you know, they just don't have, you know, the money to spend to, you know, have 30 pounds of beef, even if they have the room. And so I suppose, like, when you think about your D2C sales, who do you kind of see as your, I suppose, like ideal customer demographic or profile when you think about your D2C selling, or from what you can tell from the sales you've already made, what does that kind of look like? It seems
we're thinking it's like families, big and small families, people who care about what they're feeding their families. I really think it's kind of like myself. Like I understand, I want to know where everything's coming from. I like to know mm-hmm. what's in the food that I'm feeding my kids. That's one side of it. But a whole nother side, I've got family that's really involved in CrossFit gym kind of stuff. And that's a whole nother side with, he's got contact with some of the people on the carnivore diet kind of thing. So it's like there's the family aspect of it, wanting to know what you're feeding your family. And then there's this new side coming in of meat gives protein and we need protein to build muscle. And so that kind of seems to be the biggest.
It's basically, you know, boils down to people with the money, but you know, it has to fit their lifestyle.
Well, and I don't know why it boils down to the people with the money. Because when every time that we do comparisons, we're not far off from supermarket pricing. I actually went to the grocery store today and took pictures of some meat and put a video on TikTok because they were like $1 to $4 higher than what we're pricing things.
But in a sense, you know, people have to wrap their head around, you know, they can't go to us and just order one steak.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's
right.
You know, the grocery store might spend $20 on beef and move on with life, but you need, but we do offer, this is different. We do the afterpay option with all of our beef.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
if people want to do a quarter of a cow and spread that payment out over, what, it's 6 or 8 weeks or something like that, I think that might help out too.
It's, I mean, assumingly would. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen, I buy all my beef, you know, direct from a farmer in upstate New York here. That's why I love having conversations with other ranchers, because I've been so appreciative of him. And that is not something I've seen on any D2C beef selling website before. So I think that could really scratch like a niche for people if that's a common objection that you're getting from customers, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we just started that probably this week or yeah, we just started the Afterpay this week, and I did. It was one TikTok post that listed, we split your payments with Afterpay. And that's actually the post that really took off on TikTok.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you guys got to definitely stay in touch with me. I really want, purely curious to see how that goes. I think that's a very unique idea that I don't think really anybody else is taking advantage of, at least not in the beef selling space.
Everybody's going to do it.
Yeah. Your video goes too far. Everybody's gets to their idea. Yeah. No, but I think that's a really scrappy idea. And I think, you know, as a D2C market for, you know, beef sellers becomes larger and larger, I think that these are the kind of steps people have to take. People have to get creative on how to do it as it comes more competitive, especially where you guys are, which is one of the probably most competitive, at least local spaces, it seems out there. So.
Yeah. And I guess at the end of the day, we want to see people buying from a rancher, even if it's not us. Of course, right. We prefer it to be us, but we really want to see other farms successful. I couldn't give you the statistics because I don't know that kind of thing, but I know that the numbers of farms sustaining nowadays is not looking good. And so we want to be a success story, and the more success stories that we can find for ranchers, the better.
Yeah, I think seemingly going down the right path. I think the direct to consumer beef selling is going to be, you know, I think the biggest trend going forward as people continue to learn on their own and from, you know, beef sellers direct that are doing that consumer education like you guys do as well. I think people are starting to wise up to, you know, things they find in the grocery store, and like, why is this ground beef neon red like a traffic cone? I don't know, like, you know, but people are starting to know. They're watching documentaries. There's like, you know, big conversations going online on like really, really big podcasts. It's something that's always talked about. So yeah, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I know it's quite laborious. It's a difficult business, but I'm happy you guys are doing it. It's something that people sorely need. And even though you're in kind of a saturated local market, I think the fact that you're shipping across the country, people are really in need of that stuff where they are. And that's probably why you're finding that business maybe outside of the state. So I just want to thank you guys again for coming on and sharing your story. And you know, talking through some of the things you're grappling with here in 2024. I really appreciate it. And for anybody listening, if anybody might be interested in a potential business partnership with you guys, or just want to maybe try out the product, what's the best way to stay in touch with you all?
Our website's diamondhranch.co. My email's on there. I do all the techie stuff, and I'm probably a primary contact because he's usually out. So if people get on there, they can get in touch with us pretty easy. Or like I said, we're always on TikTok and Instagram. Same, TikTok's diamondh_forevert_ranch, and Instagram is _diamond_h_ranch. So
awesome.
That's the best.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Michael, Nikki, I just want to thank you guys again for coming on. I really appreciate that time and your insights. I just want to wish you the best of luck, continued success, and I really look forward to staying in touch with you guys and seeing how everything is going for you guys maybe in a little bit of time. So I appreciate you guys coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody.